Welcome to Threads of Enlightenment. As usual, once our guests come, you know how it is. We turn it over to them so that they can introduce themselves to us, tell us of all the wonderful things that they have created so that we can see that beautiful picture. And then we're going to go back and deconstruct all of that stuff that they told us so we can pull out all the good things so that you and I will grow to become better human spirits while we occupy this beautiful place called Earth. I want to welcome Cameron. I know he does some traveling. That's something in my heart because I have been traveling for a while. My kids have been traveling. So we have a lot to talk about. Welcome to Threads of Enlightenment, man.
Thank you, Ken. I appreciate the opportunity.
No problem. Let me ask you a quick question before we go. As traveling, how did it come about?
How did I get into it?
Yeah, how did you say, what the heck, let me jump on a plane, and where did you go?
So, funny story. So, kind of started in the middle, but so when I was doing some college courses, and I was trying to get my degree, mm-hmm. and I happened to be very lucky and get this opportunity because one of my English classes was doing the sister program with a similar school in France, mm-hmm. and long story short, they had this opportunity where we were going to go meet the sister school. So the class had an opportunity to go, mm-hmm. expenses paid, to France for, a week.
Nice.
And I expected the entire class to volunteer at such an opportunity, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, it was just me and one other woman.
Wow.
So we both, immediately got in, and then we went for a week. Where my story diverges a little bit is I actually didn't go back with them.
Mm-hmm.
I opted to stay and, pay my own way from that point on. Yeah. I ended up staying another 2 weeks by myself for the majority of, my time there. Yeah. And I pretty much explored the most of Western Europe. I went to Paris, London, Amsterdam, and kind of checked out. I went to Normandy Beach, mm-hmm. and that's kind of, I loved it so much. That's what springboarded my traveling life.
Wow. That's interesting. It's fascinating that just two of you guys out of the whole class did that. Did you ever talk to any of those folks and to find out why they didn't do that?
No, I wasn't very close to them, but I wrote about it in pretty decent detail in my book. I was absolutely floored, uh-huh. that nobody, because when he asked, he goes, "How many people are interested?" Everyone in the room raised their hand, yeah. right? I was like, "Oh no, I'm not gonna get it." And then when push came to shove, when it came time, you had to write a paper and say why you wanted to go and do some stuff. And it was only us two who bothered.
Wow.
With the time.
That is incredible. I think, everyone, we'll get there. that's just fascinating to me because, the opportunity to taste another culture is fascinating to me. It's what I think living a life is about. Until you do something like that, where you step out of your comfort zone and look into another person's culture and their food and their lifestyle, you haven't tasted anything yet. You just, you haven't experienced anything. And it's a shame that, but it's a microcosm of our world, isn't it?
I was such a Europhile at the time and still am in some ways, but I was so wanting to go, yeah. there just in general. Mm-hmm. And when that opportunity came, I was absolutely, I was clawing my way onto that plane. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Talk to me about, on the onset, we talked about your story. How was your family life and stuff like that? Because you have achieved much at a young age, but I tell people, self-development has no limit as far as age, because I know people that are in their 80s and 90s that didn't even start. So it is just how hungry someone is about getting to where they want to go at a quicker pace. So talk to me as to your family upbringing, stuff like that, so that we can move on.
So. Pretty kind of typical, both parents in the house, mm-hmm. Middle class, pretty normal. Just went to school and, went to the beach. Sometimes we lived in Massachusetts, so we weren't far from the beach,
yeah.
and everything was normal. I was born 1996. Everything was normal until about 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And, we kind of lost, we were heavily in real estate, my parents, and they lost pretty much everything. Yep. And that is when, I guess, the interesting part starts. So we actually had to sell our home, and we ended up moving into a family friend's house. They kind of helped take care of us. I was trying to just finish up high school.
Yeah.
I'm technically not supposed to go to high school anymore, so it was kind of like a stressor for 2 years.
Yeah.
So I was hiding the fact that I was moving, and you know, so we kind of went from middle to like bottom, and then it kind of worked my way back up.
Yeah.
So after high school for me, I was bouncing around, not really intentful or have any idea or purpose or plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just doing some college classes, trying to get through like everyone else, until one day I wanted to be like a state trooper,
mm-hmm.
Economist. I wanted to be a real estate agent. I wanted to be a rocket scientist. So all these things. I tried all. I handled all these things. None of them really stuck with me.
Yeah.
I didn't like it. Wasn't passionate about it. And then someone told me, I think it was my mother, told me about this, the Air National Guard,
mm-hmm.
the military.
Yep.
And being, I kind of just said, screw it. And I went for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I joined, didn't tell anyone. I got shipped away for most of 2017. And then did some more training after that. But the end result of that was I had a nice nest egg because I didn't have to spend anything. So I had like $30,000. You know, when I left, I had like two,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is nothing.
Yeah.
And then I had a, you know, a decent chunk of change at 30,
yeah.
30,000. And while all my peers were buying, you know, cars and toys and clothes, shoes, you know what I mean? TVs, all the video game stuff. I actually put that money into a cheap car for myself, a Toyota Camry, and the rest of it was to a down payment on a multifamily home.
Mm.
That's how I started my financial journey, really. So I moved out of that home and started renting the other side. I finished up my degree with the help of the military. I got a corporate job, worked there for a year, saved up, you know, I live well below my means even to this day.
Yeah.
And I saved up enough money to buy a second multifamily home and then started renting, you know, between those rents. I was able to quit the job and I was able to pursue what my passion project was. And I didn't know it at the time, but turns out that was the book I wrote.
Yeah.
And hanging out and talking to people like you, really.
It's awesome, man. I love what you do and how you manifest yourself within the programming of society where you came in. And you were living below what they tell us that we ought to run out and get. Because when we run out and get those things, we find ourselves in debt. We got all twisted and we are just locked in forever. And that's chasing the cars, all the little things. And people don't understand the other principles that governs and help them to perform better within that arena. I wanted to talk to you about here you are. You got a chance to go into this aspect of your life where I remember 2008. Let me tell you a little about 2008. I was in, I was building homes. I was working for a builder. We saw it coming, but everyone in the building industry, we thought it was going to be like for a short time. No one thought that it was going to be anything like what it turned out to be, man. And I know people that lost everything. I know people that were walking away from homes, leaving the key and just walking away. It was a crazy time within that industry. It changed many lives. So I know what it does and what it did to family. Here you are. You took this course and you took your mom's advice and you joined up. How did it help you to form your mindset when you were in that arena where you were learning about discipline, self-discipline, and all of those different
tools? So great question. I'm going to preface this for everybody that, you know, I did go to basic training and what they call tech school. It was certainly an interesting and different development. You know, I know that the Air Force is of the easier training, so I just want to get that out of the way. But there, you know, there is a level of discipline and you know, you don't own yourself.
Yeah.
You're going to do what I say right now quickly, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of put your head down and, you know, I think it was 9 weeks we were away, no phones, no contact with home. And again, it's not the end of the world, but you know, at the time, at the time for like a 20-year-old, it can be something.
Yeah.
So what my biggest takeaway from that, when I say my biggest personal development is, I wrote about this too, was one of the MTIs said, the best way to get out of here is go through.
Mm.
Don't quit. Don't try to circumvent the system. You go through it. The best way out is through.
Yeah.
And I say that to myself to this day because, you know, a lot of people are in the middle of the grind right now, or they're going through hard times, mm-hmm. or they're suffering. What's the best way out of that situation?
Yeah.
You got to go through it.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to suck. You know, it's not going to be fun, but if you, you know, make a plan for yourself, stick to it and keep hammering at that, you know, at that issue,
yeah.
you know, you will eventually be through it. Another way he said is just make it to your next meal. Just make it to your next meal. Yeah. Just make it to your next meal. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think one of the things that people lack, and I know there are studies about this. I've read about those studies where they gathered people, a bunch of kids from high school and college and so forth, and they have them do goals. They'll set their goals. They'll grab kids. And who had what I call, Cameron, was a statement of faith, something they believed in, regardless of what it looked like. However we got that statement, whether someone deposited it into you, whether you went through hard times and you created it yourself, but you hold on to that, and that's what guides you regardless. You don't care when the time gets hard. You come on through, like your leader said, go right through it. And that's what it is that you make this commitment within yourself that maybe no one knows, you know, but you know. And yeah. You make this commitment, and a lot of people that I talked over, I mean, I'm talking about adults, haven't made that connection. When you talk to some of the kids in college, half of them haven't made that connection of that statement, I want to be a doctor. A few of them are going to go, I want to be a doctor. Then they do the work, Cameron, to become a doctor. And yeah, that's exactly what people are afraid of. Like you talked about, the trip to Paris, of all places, that you're going to get paid for. Do you want to go? Everybody put their hands up. Yes. But when it came to the work was pretty simple. Just write something minor about it, you know? And they,
one page.
Yeah, they weren't even committed to that. That's why I laughed when you said it. I was like, "Are you kidding me?" And that's most of the people today, though.
It's that situation specifically struck me so hard because I was like, "Really? You can't even again lift a finger to do this for yourself? You're gonna let this opportunity pass you?" Again, to my benefit, no doubt, but. It was almost like a wake up call because again I was still young, but I'm just like, this is the saddest like thing I've ever seen. Especially again, most of it were my age or younger or about, and it's just like the saddest thing I've ever seen. That generation, my generation, really like do. Yeah. It's almost like a case study. You took like 25 random 20-year-olds, and 19 of them were unwilling to lift a finger. It's really amazing the lack of drive.
Drive. It is a case study. That's what I said earlier. It's a microcosm of the world. It fascinated me.
Yeah, it's yeah.
Wow. It's Paris, man. But
it wasn't a cheapo trip either. We were eating well and we were staying in a nice place. Like it was a hell of an experience.
Talk to me about that experience as to how did it form your thinking when it came to your perception of life, your perception of what people hold sacred versus when you walk into a different culture, different belief system. Talk to me how that impacts.
So, yeah, I've always been a huge fan of all the different cultures, again, still to this day.
Yeah.
My biggest takeaway was just the word opportunity just rang through my head almost the entire time. Because there's opportunities that you make for yourself, you know, that you like, but then there's also opportunities that kind of just pass right by you and you gotta catch it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I vowed to never let opportunity slip by. I mean, not that I did, but you gotta pay attention to these opportunities, jump in front of them, you know, even just introducing yourself to somebody, networking, getting a phone number, having a conversation. All these little things can set you up for success in so many ways. And I got lucky, I'll admit, with the program, But, you know, why hound someone for being lucky when you could say, well, what about the other 19 who didn't lift a finger to... It was a life-changing experience.
Yeah. How did you think, or what happened in your life, Cameron, that you think that made you aware, to be aware of those type situations? Because you have to live in some form of awareness to get it, to get that revelation that, hey, opportunities are coming all day long. I have to be aware to recognize them and then take advantage of it. What did you think happened in your life that caused you to be like that?
So, that particular event was certainly a big push in that direction, but I feel like I've always kind of been like that since a kid. I was kind of like a loner when I was like really young, which isn't great for, you know, kids. So I kind of like developed a different mind of my own, I feel like. Yeah. But I've always been, you know, aware of kind of myself and, you know, how I feel and what my like place in the world is, so to say. Yeah. So as I grew up, I was kind of just always kind of watching and observing people and things and how they interact, how people like, you know, yelled at the teachers or got in fights or did their homework or blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it kind of just was an incremental, like your actions lead to certain results.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah, that's,
you must, the awareness is like really the only thing. So how I ended up getting into real estate was I didn't have any passion at the time. I just wanted to not work. Yeah. Right. I just did not want to go to a day job. Mm-hmm. So I go, what is the fastest way? What's the only way to not work?
Yeah.
And basically it was real estate. Yeah. So instead of buying cars, I was just like, okay, house instead. Mm-hmm. And it, allotted me the opportunity to be alone in my house, bored with nothing to do. Yeah. And I had all these things running around in my mind. And that's how I ended up writing the book. Cause I just free time and an idle mind, like brought me somewhere.
Oh, that's good, man. That's good to hear. People, you know, I hear this story all the time. I've interviewed so many people, Cameron, and I find that this very same trait amongst all of them that I feel that are a little more aware of life than most is that they are alone. They're loners when they're kids. And I cannot tell you the amount of people that I've interviewed. And that same thing there is
that's very interesting.
All and every one of them. And it's really fascinating to me to hear it. I'm looking at you and you're saying it and I'm thinking, oh my God, this thing is just running through everyone. Wow. Is that they're usually quiet. They're usually by themselves. And what happens to them and everyone like that from my conversation is that they become better students of themselves and people. They become students of behavior, human behavior, at a young age by observation. You described it just like everyone else. It's just amazing.
That's so funny. I didn't know that. So I love that you shared that with me.
Yeah, it's a common thread. So you're not alone, man. Everyone that I've talked to. So here you are. You're looking at life from a different lens. And I keep saying to people, I love your perspective on life. And having that perspective that you have, that clarity of being aware and looking for opportunities, that's a beautiful state to be in and to have your mind in on a 24-hour-a-day schedule. So here you are, you got the house, everyone's buying the fancy cars and clothes, looking good, you're laid up in your house, you're in your room, and there's, bam, this thought comes, you know what, I'm going to write a book, talk to me about it.
So it's funny you ask. I mean, I want to say one thing about perspective before I answer your question. It was like something hit me while you were saying that. It's like people kind of just go through life and life is happening to them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like it's almost like a crushing weight. Like, oh, I have to do this. I have to do that. And, you know, or you can look at it like, you know, instead of life happening to you, like you're happening, like you can make things happen. Yeah. And you, if you align yourself and have a plan and have a goal, like you said, doctor, and you keep, you keep hitting that thing, you'll eventually break through. Yeah. So I just wanted to say that.
Yeah. It's how people, I'm telling you, it's a shift of perspective. and it will get you out of your situation faster, and it will give you the power that is necessary in order to stand up. Because the other life, Cameron, is a life of a victim, a mentality of victimhood, one that is making and living the way that we talked about, is one of power. You're making choices versus victimhood. It's two different lifestyles.
I love that.
It is two different lifestyles. And that's how people...
Victimhood is definitely the worst trait we've adopted as a culture lately.
Yeah. It's a shame.
But back to your question about the book. So it's actually not a nice story. So I was kind of having like a purpose crisis. Mm-hmm. You know, I was home for a month.
Yeah.
You know, I was playing video games and drinking and eating. I was you know, sitting on my high horse, you know. But that's the dream. That's what everyone wants, right? But after just a mere, you know, couple of weeks, I was sitting there like, I can't take this. I hate this. I hated my life. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. And it was like a mini crisis. I was like, how can this be? How can I have worked hard for this? And now, like, I hate it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of, and then I started thinking, I was like, man, imagine being, you know, working for 40, I only worked for, you know, maybe 5-10 years from, you know, I was working in a restaurant when I was like young, but imagine working 40, 50, 60 years, retiring at 65. And after a month you go, I can't take this. And it kind of toiled in my head, and I was awake at 6 a.m, never went to bed, which is never good. And I was just completely like going insane, like beehive in my mind. And I sat down and I typed, I've never written anything. I never typed anything really. And I wrote 10,000 words, just let it out like a fountain.
Yeah.
And you know, then I was like, huh, this is interesting. So I Google, how many words is the average book? 60,000. So I just knocked out, you know, a six. So in that, what I typed ended up being the basis of my first chapter really.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously it took months of refinement, and you know, I spent probably 6-8 hours a day for 3-4 months writing the thing, and then I had to get edited, and it was like a whole process. But the foundation was that little mini crisis typing spasm, you know, at 6-7 a.m. at like a low point. So that's an interesting, thank you for asking that.
No problem. You know, I love it. Everybody's an idiot. I'm one, two, big spades, man. I can't even tell you. I'm in big spades, but I'm willing to learn. I'm open to challenges and open to new principles and stuff like that, so that I can move from that to maybe a different space. But you know, it's just moving in life. So yeah, so here you are. You're in this mini crisis, and you began to type and you put this thing together. How did you come about the title of the book?
So yeah, so that's a. The title and the cover, you know, the most important part. So I didn't have a title till near the end, really. My intention title was All the Advice You've Never Been Told, which is a terrible, terrible title. And one day I was at my parents' house having dinner, and I was, you know, going on like, I was kind of like ranting because I forget what it was, but someone in my life did something really dumb.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, don't do that. It's dumb. They did it anyway. And they're like, oh, I can't believe this happened. I'm like, it's completely predictable. And I was like, kind of like ranting a little bit. And then I was like, everyone's such an idiot. Like, everyone's an idiot. And I just like said it like 2 or 3 times. And my dad looks at me and goes, that's the title of your book. So yeah, no special story, really, but that's what it is.
Well, I think it was a special story because, again, you have to be in this state of expectancy, a state of awareness, and your dad was in that space when you were in another space, you know, and he was able to pick it out and toss it at you, and you looked at it and you go, yeah, so that whole scenario was necessary, you know?
Yeah. It was necessary. Yeah, I certainly don't regret it.
Yeah, so I think... And I tell everyone, every situation that presents in your life is there for a purpose. You know what it is? You called it into you. Because and I call those things, those situations, into our space because we need to learn something from it. Now, if you live in a state of awareness, you'll come out faster because you'll, as you say, you're alert, your sixth sense is awake. You're looking for spaces to and for things to manifest. But if you're
law of attraction.
Yeah. But if you're drifting, you're going to be smattered and beat up and all come out bruised. And then 5 years later, you're going to realize you missed it.
I read this quote somewhere. I don't remember where, but it said, a paper boat is not going to be happy no matter where the water takes it.
I like that. That's absolutely beautiful. So here you are. You got your title and you decided to put it out there. Talk to me about that process, because I had to do the same, the editing, all the other things. People think you just come with this beautiful book, you toss it out. It is a journey in itself. You have all kinds of different, I remember arguing with the person that was editing, telling them, no, you don't get what I'm trying to say, you know? So, yeah.
I had a couple of those for sure.
Yeah, tell me about those, man.
So, yeah, it's definitely like a nightmare process, because you think it's just like, oh, you think writing it's the hard part, when it's honestly not.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can just sit in a room and hammer away as long as you want uninterrupted, but the second you need to, you know, your thoughts are great and all, but if no one understands what the hell you're trying to say, what good are they, right?
Yep.
So the editor comes through, you know, it took us weeks of back and forth, and it was quite insane, but the biggest personal struggle I had was I did it all myself, mm-hmm. so I didn't go through a publishing company. Apparently, publishing companies take 99% of like the money from the thing. I was like, well, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So I did it myself, did a lot of research, and ultimately Amazon is really the only option if you want to self-publish, as they call it.
Yeah.
So I went through them. They take, you know, 40 or 60%, which is still a lot, but that's like the best you're going to get, apparently, to my surprise. But even to this day, I'm still kind of having issues with Amazon, because I didn't know anything at the time. Mm-hmm. So I basically submitted it to them, like for formatting. And long story short, it's been such a nightmare trying to get their system to align with the. I gave them a Google Doc. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You're supposed to give them a PDF.
Yeah,
I didn't know that, and it's been like it took me like months to kind of like fix some things. Yeah. So I think I'm almost good now. I'm still trying to get the hardcover like put together.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's proving to be difficult. But yeah, it's just a lot of the little details that you wouldn't think as someone who's, you know, just angrily typing away. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the nuances of publishing, and even dealing with someone like an editor and stuff like that, you have to learn different principles even within that relationship. You have to come to a place, Cam, where you have to surrender and trust their judgment in certain things, and that transition of surrendering. Again, that's also part of personal growth, where you are at a place where you're locked in with someone else, and they're like, you know, they're being the editor. They have a better look as to how it would present on the outside, and you have this inner thing. You're going, wait a minute, you know, and you have to bounce it back and forth, and then there is this place that you have to surrender. And that is also a spiritual lesson that you and I have to learn, that we have to surrender certain parts of our person, mental part of our mind, the logical piece sometime, and just we have to go with what they say, your gut, your internal strength to make that decision. Yeah. And there's always that battle. That you have to surrender sometimes from that mental stuff and go, okay, I'm gonna do it, and it usually works out pretty good. But it takes some time to make that crossover. I know for me it did. You know, so talk to the people about your relationship now. Once you put out this, because I read also that you have your counseling thing. How did all of that come about in addition to your book?
So. In my life, you know, I've had friends from, you know, all ages growing up. And I've obviously got some pretty unorthodox thinking in my head.
Mm-hmm.
But what I like to say is, you know, I think it's for the better, because as you can see, my life is a living testimony as to why, you know, my way is better. You know, I'd always offer advice to my friends and be like, you know, they'd be like, oh, this girl is doing this, or this guy's doing that, or what should I do in this situation? And I would offer my advice. Sometimes it was taken, most times it was not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, watching people throughout my life, and again, even like the military people who were buying cars instead of stuff, like the normal way of thinking, isn't that great, you know, the conventional way of doing things, you know, life's great and all, and I love, you know, America and the system's, you know, great, but it's, you gotta take some of the system and you gotta staunchly reject some of the system as well. Mm-hmm. So how that started was, you know, after giving so much advice to people, I was like, you know, maybe I could help other people. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, why does this need to be in my circle? So I tried it out and, you know, gave people advice of like, oh, I don't know what to do here and there. And then I kind of like guided them through these situations, kind of like keeping them accountable, mm-hmm. kind of giving them pep talks, kind of giving them some direction, just offering advice. And things tend to work out just simply because people don't know. Yeah. People don't know what they don't know. Yeah. So if they think they're doing the right thing, but they're really shooting themselves in the foot all the time, mm-hmm. you know, it's hard to win a race with a bullet hole in your foot. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
That's how I kind of started. I was like, maybe I can help other people. Mm.
It's great. You know, one of the things that I try here at Threads of Enlightenment is when I have folks like yourself on and people, as they're listening to your story, that it challenges them. Say, wait a minute. What am I doing? You know, let me get in touch with Cameron. I want to talk to him a little more than what I heard on the podcast. So that you can take them through once they get into your counseling, and that's how they get to you. And I tell people, Cameron, when you buy your books, it's basically a one-on-one. You have a one-on-one with the author. You have a private session where you're not being interrupted. You got a chance to focus. You turn off the TV. You turn off all the other things. And you are focused to the exchange that is happening between the author and yourself as you read those words on the pages. And that's why I tell people, buy the books, because you're having that private time. Buy it, give it to friends, give it to family members, just give it to people, because the principles are there to free them and to help them shift their perspective on how they're looking at life right now, because their perspective that they're looking at life hasn't gotten much fruit, has it? Or the stuff they want, you know? So, you started the program. It's working. So now, I always tell people when you are awake, as they say, when you wake up, it is hard to stay still. Like you said, you got everything, and people think that when you get everything, quote unquote, that life is going to be okay. If that was the case, we wouldn't have millionaires killing themselves all day long. And because they had everything, as what we perceive is everything. But we, the inner man, is greater than all the material stuff that you can get. And it's not satisfied that way. It is never satisfied with material.
Yeah, it's funny. It's because so many people, again, some, like, let's say 100 people are listening to us right now. Mm-hmm. Almost all of them are just going to go, yeah, I've heard it before, but I don't believe you. I'm going to keep trying anyway. And it's amazing that, and I was the same exact way, you know, falls on deaf ears. But as you said, millionaires killing themselves, I thought of, like, even look higher than that. Look at the billionaires, right? Yeah. What are they all trying to do right now? Mm-hmm. They're shooting rockets into space. Yeah. They're trying to do something bigger. Yeah. They're trying to, like, push humanity out there. They're trying to make themselves, you know, legends in the history books. Yeah. Like, where does that come from? They could, you know, they are billionaires. They can go, they can buy an island, sit on it, and then that's it.
Yeah.
But that's not what they're doing, is it?
No.
So, yeah. Why?
The human spirit is just this thing that just needs, there's a couple of things that makes it thrive. Freedom is one of it. And that's why you see when a man tastes freedom, when you try to put him back in that cage, he'll look at you and go, say stuff like, I'm better off dead, you know? So.
Yeah. And so many people in history have said that, fought and died, you know, for freedom, you know, like, I forget, in Germany, there's a law where people escaping from prison, mm-hmm. if you're in jail and you try to escape, you didn't break any laws because they recognize that the human spirit wants to be free. So there's technically no wrongdoing on your part for trying to get out.
Yeah, it's just, it's there because it's a big thing. It's a powerful thing. It actually put people on the moon, and it'll take people beyond that because this spirit of man of ours wants to be free in order to not to be trapped in how we trap it by the way we perceive things. And so, you know, I am so glad that you presented here, Cameron, because it's good to see that someone your age, a young man in your space, that is doing it, because I want them to know it's that age has no limit to it. 15-year-old, 16-year-old, once they are awake, are doing it. So I tell people, wake up, man. As Cameron said, how do you want your life? You want to drift? Or do you want to make it purposeful? Do you want to start making decisions, or do you want to be tossed back and forth by the wind? You know. So, Cameron, tell me, what are the things that you're considering putting together? Number one, I want you to talk about how can they get to you with your counseling and all of the other things.
Yeah, so I just want to say thank you for the opportunity and the platform to give my message. And I do love that you keep hounding the younger people point, because so, there's a lot of people that just like, oh, I'm too young. I can't do this. I can't do that. I'm 25 now, but, you know, I started this stuff when I was, you know, 16 years old. I started kind of trying to line up things. I had certain ideas in my head. But around 20, 21 is really when I started. I think I bought my first house 22. I'm not really sure. But, yeah, and so many people... usually younger people look at me and they'll kind of try to bring me down. They'll be like, hey, this guy got some sort of secret handout, or he had some sort of, or like someone told me I made my money by gambling.
Wow.
And it's just like, you know, if you want to look for excuses, you can find excuses. Yeah. Like, again, I didn't get any special treatment. I got no inheritance. I didn't get any money. I didn't get any special loans. I didn't get any of those things. I, you know, did it. The military is obviously a huge arbiter to my success, using that wisely. Mm-hmm. But as I do have say on my website, if I can do it, anyone can do it.
Yeah.
You know, you can work a corporate job and save that, like just save and live below your means and stop thinking you need this and stop thinking you need that.
Everyone bought into that crazy programming that they taught them, is that you got to have the fancy
Everyone's
car.
Everyone's an idiot.
Yeah, pretty much. You need the fancy car. You need the best clothes. You need all this other stuff. You don't need none of that. They just tell you that because, and they advertise in 24 hours a day when you're sleeping and awake, telling you that you need it. You don't need Burger King and McDonald's. It'll kill you. The meat really exactly. kills you. I mean,
poison.
Yeah. So you don't need that, but you feel you wanted to go get it because they told you that you need to get it. But when you start to making decisions and start putting your life, the value of your life differently from others, you could start it. If you got it at 12, 10, 9, once you get it, go for it. And that's why I keep stressing it, Cameron, because I want the young kids to get it, because it's going to be them that will make this switch much faster than what my generation did and what we're leaving all these kids. The environment is burnt up because of us. So it's going to be, you know, it's going to take some young kids to look at it. I mean, and come out from a different, some little quiet kid, Cameron, in a corner, is not, you know, is not getting along with anyone or whatever. He's sitting there, and his or her mind just rolling back and forth, going. And this person has the answer, but they haven't stepped out yet, man. Thank you for coming to Threads of Enlightenment. I really appreciate you coming by and sharing your story and trusting us with all the knowledge and the principles that you've gained and where you are today. Thank you so much, sir, for coming.
Yeah, thank you. And if people want to see and hear more of my stuff, CameronDenalis.com, it's just my name, and you can send me a thing on there. You can read a little more. And then obviously on Amazon, I have the book, which is in paperback, ebook, and audiobook is what I did too, which was a nightmare. But with the hardcover hopefully coming soon. But again, thank you so much for the opportunity and the platform, and I had a great time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.